Over static, letters appear that turn solid white as the background fades to black. HBO. Particles of light fly against a black background to form the words HBO Documentary Films. HBO Documentary Films presents...
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States. Oh, yeah.
A smiling President Clinton greets congressmen.
My fellow Americans, we are fortunate to be alive at this moment in history.
Clips from movies and TV play.
Never before has our nation enjoyed so much prosperity, the fastest economic growth in more than 30 years, with over 20 million new jobs, the first back-to-back surpluses in 42 years.
You've got mail.
And next month, America will achieve the longest period of economic growth in our entire history.
An outline of the U.S. flashes, then disappears except for the state of Florida. A title, 537 votes.
Record-breaking stock market to the best job market in a generation. The U.S. economy continues to defy even the optimists' expectations.
Al Gore and his advisors are hoping that focusing on the booming economy will put his campaign on firm ground.
He's the most qualified person in my lifetime to seek this job.
A reporter talks to George Bush.
You're pitted against Al Gore now. You used to be way ahead of him, and now it's neck and neck. Does that mean that the more people see you, Governor, the less they like you?
The stage is set for Bill Clinton to hand off the baton to Al Gore and lead that roaring economy into the 21st century.
I know my own imperfections. Sometimes people say I'm too serious, that I talk too much substance in policy.
I was apprehended in Kennebunkport, Maine for a DUI.
You're now in the final stretch of this race for president, what could be the closest contest in 40 years.
Whoever wins Florida wins the presidency.
Critical will be Florida's 12% Hispanic population.
I think wherever the Hispanic vote goes, that is where the state of Florida will go.
This state is going to be crucial in the election of 2000.
It's hot, it's cool, it's a tropical jewel. My, 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 am I.
Images from Florida flash by, including people swimming, sailing, and playing tennis. Michael Putney, veteran Miami political reporter.
Miami, which had been famously a cultural wasteland in the 70s and 80s, began to emerge as a hot, happening place. South Beach began to emerge as a place for beautiful models and people who wanted to hang out with beautiful models. But Miami would be a pleasant backwater if it were not for the Cubans who came here.
The Cuban flag flies at a street event.
The Cubans provide really the heartbeat of this city.
There's two Cubans. There's the island, and then there's the peninsula of South Florida.
And Louise Bardak.
The 90s was when the Cubans really coalesced their power in South Florida.
Fernanda Mondi.
Coming into 2000, of its 2.3 million residents, Cubans were the majority minority group that outnumbered Anglos by 200,000 votes and even black residents by 220,000 votes.
At one point, every single lever of power in Miami is controlled by a Cuban American.
Think about that for a minute. A major American city and the entire city council of most cities were Cuban American.
Rick Sanchez.
And every single mayor was a Cuban American. That's nuts.
And I'll tell you, it's a pleasure to stand on this stage today and see all of the communities and all of the faces that make Miami one of the greatest cities in the entire world. Here, as in the Hispanic community, words like familia, comunidad, educación, patria, y Dios are not just palabras. They're values and virtues that guide everyday life. And there's nobody who understands the meaning of those words more than my friend Alex Penelas.
Words appear November 11th, 1999, 362 days until the election.
Miami-Dade County Mayor Alex Penelas is People Magazine's choice for sexiest politician.
In his 9 years in politics, he has become adept at responding to what voters want. The child of immigrants works hard, plays by the rules, and ends up at the top of the political ladder.
Alex Penelas,
Jeff Garcia,
was boy mayor.
Never lacking for self-confidence, Alex Penelas has propelled himself to the center of South Florida's political stage.
Alex Penelas was one of the most exciting politicians in the history of Miami.
He was hanging with Bill Clinton and Al Gore. I thought it was kind of cool.
I'm young, and I think that's exactly what the people of this community wanted.
One of the incredible things that Alex pulled off is he realized how to be a Democrat and how to live in the traditional Cuban-American world. And he could navigate both of those simultaneously, and nobody had ever done that before.
I, Alex Penelas.
At just 34, Penelas has been elected to the new job of executive mayor of Dade County.
Alex Penelas was the great Cuban hope. This was the tipping point at which Cuban Americans became the dominant political force in Miami.
With 2 million constituents, he is Florida's second most powerful politician after the governor. And some say the most influential Hispanic politician in America.
He was more dynamic and had more promise than Marco Rubio ever could have. And as People magazine pointed out, he's also far better looking. Song. There was a lot of momentum behind him, and there started to become this chatter. I could really see him as a cabinet secretary. I could see him as a U.S. senator.
And much like a farmer,
there were mentions that Penelas was going to possibly be Al Gore's running mate in 2000.
Alex had all the promise in the world. You know, the sky was the limit for him.
What can change that?
November 25th, 348 days until the election.
And from the ocean waters off the coast of Florida tonight, a real-life Thanksgiving story to tell you about.
About 6:40 this morning, a 5-year-old child came ashore on a small inner tube.
The young boy is placed on a stretcher.
His mother, stepfather, and other refugees drowned trying to reach the U.S. illegally.
In Miami, family members knew relatives were making the crossing. They had heard a boat capsized, and they feared all were dead.
When Elian Gonzalez is found Thanksgiving 1999, bobbing offshore, this extraordinary image of a 5-year-old child found by the two fishermen. This child survived this horrific tragedy.
Cubans are very Catholic. The story of St. Lazarus, the story of the Virgin Mary, and the story of somebody being lost at sea, La Virgen de la Caridad, as Cubans call her, which is the story of the guy who doesn't think he's going to survive in the ocean, and he looks up and he prays to the Virgin of Charity and says, please spare my life. And that's the story that Cubans saw with Elian Gonzalez.
Everything became very biblical, very mythological, nothing to do with the actual reality of the situation.
Elian Gonzalez in Miami today, the 5-year-old at the center of an international tug of war. On one side, his father in communist Cuba, today demanding his son be returned home.
For most Americans, when there's one willing parent who is competent of looking after the child, it's a no-brainer.
Every non-Cuban person in the United States thought Elian Gonzalez should be returned to Cuba.
On the other side, his extended family in Miami, relatives he had never met before, exiles who came here in search of freedom, saying Elian now belongs in the United States.
Every Cuban in Miami thought that he should stay with his relatives here in Miami because that was his mother's intent. And she died trying to do that, so let's honor her intent.
If Elian Gonzalez was from Long Island, then he should be returned to his father. But he wasn't.
Neil Rogers.
This is strictly a pissing contest. Who's going to get the brownie points? Is it going to be Fidel, God forbid, or is it going to be the crazy people in this town? It hasn't got anything to do with this poor little 6-year-old kid. He's like the wishbone of Thanksgiving. We got Fidel and his crazy people on the one side pulling one leg in one direction, and we got the crazy people in this town pulling on the other.
The disparity in public opinion yielded some brutal satire on shows like Saturday Night Live, The Daily Show.
This boat's a rockin', and it's looking pretty bad. We ain't gonna make it, but we gotta save the lad, save the boy,
save Elian.
Elian, the Cuban boy.
All I'll say about Elian is thank God he's Cuban. Because if he was Haitian, you'd have never heard about his ass.
Comedian Dave Chappelle performs.
If Elian Gonzalez was Elian the Moonbo from Haiti, they'd have pushed that little rubber tube right back in the water. Sorry, fella, all full. Good luck.
Cuba demands return of 6-year-old refugee. Yankees refuse to let him out of the contract.
A visibly angry President Fidel Castro accused the United States government of kidnapping 5-year-old Elian Gonzalez and demanded his return within 72 hours. He says particularly offensive to the Cuban people, Elian's trip to Disney World and then Universal Studios.
Elian showed some lingering signs of his Thanksgiving ordeal and rescue at sea when he went on the It's a Small World water ride.
He was a little bit frightened at one time with the boat and asked the question, is this boat going to sink?
Family spokesman Armando Gutierrez says Elian eventually relaxed, and afterwards he gave the boy a coin to toss in the water.
Armando Gutierrez showed up on the scene. He said, oh, I saw this on the news, the child in the sea, and I knew right away this was a situation that begged for my intervention. Armando Gutierrez is a kingmaker. You could think of him maybe as part Karl Rove, part Lee Atwater, with a kind of Desi Arnaz sense of humor.
Wherever I am,
they don't even want to discuss it with Elian. This is a typical, propaganda of the Cuban government, diverting attention from a serious disaster.
His main job was advising judicial candidates, which really meant that he would scare other judicial candidates.
In Florida, judges have to run for office, so there's this whole electoral industry around judicial campaigns.
He played all these games where he would move one guy from one seat to another seat, pit people against each other, and to him, judicial races were a chessboard, and nobody else wanted to do them because they're boring kind of crap races. But Armando made a niche out of it, and he made a lot of money off of it, and he was very successful at it.
For example, if he had a client and somebody else wanted to get into the race, he would go to that person and say, I happen to know you've said or done these things, so I suggest that you stay out of this race. And guess what? It worked.
The shakedown.
Putney
nods.
Armando Gutierrez was a very congenial shakedown artist.
When asked once by the Miami Herald what type of shady tactics he may or may not have used, Armando Gutierrez volunteered, I don't extort anyone.
He was known to be one of those black operatives.
Raul Martinez.
Nobody seized the Elian opportunity better than Armando Gutierrez. In that moment, he became the gatekeeper.
Everybody ready? Okay, everybody ready?
Yeah. January 10th, 2000, 302 days until the election.
This morning, another turn in the case of Elian Gonzalez. A judge has ordered the 6-year-old boy to stay in the U.S. until at least March.
The Miami family members, they went into family court and said, we want the legal right to have this child. And Judge Rodriguez ruled in their favor.
In a sweeping decision, family court judge Rosa Rodriguez ordered that the little Cuban boy remain in his Miami home.
The status quo shall be preserved until such time as a full hearing on the verified petition for temporary custody and other relief is held.
What nobody knew was that Armando Gutierrez had been the campaign advisor to Rosa Rodriguez.
Judge Rosa Rodriguez of Family Court in Miami is defending herself over questions about a former campaign consultant. When she ran for election as judge in 1998, this man was a key paid campaign advisor, Armando Gutierrez. But now he's acting as spokesman for the boy's Miami relatives.
And of course, Armando Gutierrez was busy, smearing the judges all over town. Finally, they had that first court hearing that came up, which turned out to be really shady. He seems to have his hand in every judge's pocket.
I haven't called her, I haven't sent her a telegram, and I haven't sent her any smoke signals.
Once again, it just didn't pass the smell test.
Tonight, Attorney General Janet Reno is making it clear it is federal immigration case and laws that will decide all of this. The Immigration Service says he should be returned.
The temporary legal custody awarded his uncle by a Miami judge will not be recognized by the Justice Department because the Attorney General says, quote, that question remains one of federal, not state law.
Enter Janet Reno, not just a Florida native, but a Miami native. She spent 15 years as the lead prosecutor here in Miami-Dade County. So she wasn't going to let some state-elected judge preside over this case when she knew how the game was played down here.
What is at issue is a father who wants his son home and grandparents who want their grandson home. And these are bonds that should be honored.
Janet Reno spoke softly, but she carried a big stick.
In Washington, the only sound was the metallic click of a magazine sliding into Janet Reno's Glock as she slipped into her periwinkle blue ass-kicking tunic.
John Stewart comically stretches his neck.
America's most talked about six-year-old, the boy on the cover of Time, offered a wave to photographers this morning as he was taken to school.
Elian stopped being a 5 or 6 year old boy very quickly and became a symbol for American freedom and liberty.
Up to 40 news crews a day from as far away as Italy recording every moment.
From his first thumbs up at the hospital, yeah, to the parade for the crowd last night. The adults around him have coached and coaxed and never let him forget the photographers.
Even more bizarre, the boy's bigger-than-life celebrity status. Complete strangers waiting hours to see or touch the child they call a miracle.
They stay glued to the radio, absorbing every ounce of information about Elian.
Diferente.
A fascination fueled by an aggressive campaign led by family spokesperson Armando Gutierrez, helping to keep 200,000 Spanish radio listeners,
the fate of Elian Gonzalez,
and an even bigger English audience tuned in daily.
Cuban Talk Radio in South Florida in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s was the most powerful mobilizing force anywhere in America.
The radio here gets politicians out onto the streets, he said. It mobilizes public opinion.
Cuban American radio was in Miami, very similar to what Fox News has been nationally for Republicans.
If you had a dime for each time Cuban radio announcers used the words communist or Fidel Castro in their newscast, you'd probably be on your way to retirement by now.
One of the things that the Republican Party figured out in Florida, and especially in Miami, was that you could weaponize the Cuba issue. And the way to weaponize that issue was to use the C word, communists.
Cuban radio stations encourage violence against moderate exiles, those who want a dialogue with Castro.
There were Cuban Americans who didn't want this kid to stay here, who thought he should go back. They were too afraid to speak out.
In public, it was one thing. In private, it was totally different.
They knew that there would be repercussions. Sometimes the repercussions could be violent.
Al Cardenas.
Frankly, the Cuban American community has never shown itself to have acted violently under any circumstances.
The bomb went off at Miami International Airport shortly before 11:30.
The bomb exploded shortly after midnight.
Between 1965 through the 90s, there were over 150 bombings where some people lost their businesses or lost their limbs or even their lives.
The FBI says Miami has had more terrorist activity over the past 3 decades than any other U.S. city.
Bombings and death threats and vandalism.
Some believe the blast has done irreparable damage to the image of Miami's Cuban Americans.
Ramon Cernuda, Cuban Museum.
Miami behaves like a banana republic, that the rights and the laws are being violated in order to support the machinery of extreme right-wing elements in the Cuban American community.
There were 800,000 Cuban Americans living in Miami at the time, but a minority of mostly hardliner extremists very much dictated the conversation.
You've got this small but vocal and hysterical group of people fanned on by the Spanish language radio stations in this town, and these crazy people, irresponsible people, to get on there and whip them up and encourage them to do these things.
At a rally, a poster reads, "No Clinton, Castro, Reno. Miami loves Elion."
Unfortunately, Elian Gonzalez did become a proxy argument for other things. He was used for political purposes.
They're following orders either from Clinton's lawyer or Fidel, and they need to answer to the community and to the world.
There was this endless parade of politicians who came for a photo op with this kid.
It's mostly the Republicans. They're the ones who are the most vehemently anti-immigration, and yet now because they think they can make some political brownie points, they're grandstanding on this bullcrap.
Incredible the way they were using the kid. People coming from Washington, that's pandering of the worst kind.
But to create this hysteria over one immigration case, that's all this is. How many immigration hearings are there every year in this country? How many thousands? How many desperate children come here, including kids from China, another communist country? Anybody protesting about that?
No.
Every Republican politician was there sucking ass yesterday. They couldn't get there fast enough to exploit this and jump on a goddamn bandwagon.
It was sad to see, really.
One of the reasons that Washington is listening so carefully to South Florida today is because of the solid vote block that the Cuban Americans can give. In the last election, President Clinton got about 40% of the Cuban vote. If a Democratic president can get over 35% of the Cuban vote in a close race, that will guarantee him the state of Florida.
At last night's Republican presidential debate, all the candidates demand that Elian be allowed to stay here and his father allowed to join him if he wishes.
The man ought to be brought to the United States, given a whiff of freedom, so he can see how wonderful our country is.
The election year politics surrounding the Elian Gonzalez case got a little more intense today.
Even the vice president has split with his own administration, saying the court must decide and sounding very much like the Republicans.
This child's mother died in an effort to get her child freedom.
That puts Gore in opposition to President Clinton, but in line with South Florida's big block of Cuban expatriate voters.
Vice President Al Gore visited a pharmacy in Connecticut yesterday where he's getting some Advil. Apparently he hurt his back flip-flopping on this Elian issue. back and forth, screwing up.
Al Gore should use his influence today to give Elian a ray of hope by insisting that the administration, of which he is a part, uses its legal authority to keep Elian in the United States while his best interests are determined.
I did not think at the time that this thing would become so big that it would influence the politics of the United States of America.
President Clinton has said repeatedly he wants to avoid playing politics with the life of a six-year-old boy.
Maybe it's just because I'm not running for anything, but I just somehow wish that whatever is best for this child could be done.
But Gore is running for something, and he faces an uphill fight in Florida, especially if federal authorities forcibly return Elian to Cuba.
It wasn't until we started to see that rift developing between Al Gore and Bill Clinton that we started to say, oh, shit.
225 days until the election.
Earlier today on the federal courthouse steps, mayors from 21 cities mounted their protest. The most controversial remarks from Miami-Dade County Mayor Alex Pinellas.
In a press conference, the mayor of Miami stepped up to his sound machine.
Alex Pinellas.
If their continued provocation in the form of unjustified threats to revoke the boy's parole leads to civil unrest and violence, we are holding the federal government responsible, and specifically Janet Reno and the President of the United States.
Stewart raises his eyebrows.
You don't want to provoke Janet Reno. She'll break free from her moorings and drop Elian in Havana personally.
A photo shows Janet Reno holding a cutout of Elian in front of several boats.
First of all, you never incite violence. Even if you think you're right, you don't incite or you don't talk about violence.
We will not lend our respective resources, whether they be in the form of police officers or any other resources, to assist the federal government in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I like the mayor very much, but I still believe in the rule of law here. We all have to, whatever the law is, whatever the decision is ultimately made, the rest of us ought to obey it.
Stewart eats from an oversized box of popcorn.
There was an explosion in Miami. The Cuban community, in many ways led by Alex Benalas, rose up and they said, no way this kid is going back. There were demonstrations in the streets. There were people marching. It was sort of like Les Miserables, Miami style.
A line of protesters hold a long pole with posters reading, pray for Elion. They drop it. Protesters break through barriers. A line of police with shields and batons faces the marchers.
And this small band of malcontents, of militant assholes, who insist on getting their way, and anybody in Dade County that dares to say anything opposite is crucified, vilified, communista, maricón, barabin, barabupa. Those are the people that run all of South Florida. 4 million people whose lives and fate and everyday life is determined, and quality of that life, by a few thousand selfish imbeciles who have no concern for anybody else. Nice going, Mayor Penis, and all you other pandering assholes, you.
There are a lot of people here today who are expressing very deep emotions.
You phony. His name should be changed from a penis to Pinga. That's what I'm going to start calling him from this day forward. Mayor Pinga Pequeña.
Means a man with a small member.
People have demonstrated appropriately.
Reporting from Florida International University in Miami.
April 7th, 2000, 214 days until the election.
I remember Ted Koppel comes to town. Everybody's going to be watching Nightline to see what happened with the Elion saga. And there was their nemesis, Janet Reno.
I want to work this out so force is not used, so that we do it in a way that is fair to all concerned.
And then there was going to be Alex Penelas, who people wondered which way he was going to go.
And it was there that Ted Koppel called out Penelas.
Do you want to say to the Attorney General, to her face, what she said when she was not present? Namely, if there was violence, it would be on her head and on the president's head.
And guess what? Alex Penelas really didn't.
Ted, I think we are all responsible for our actions, each and every one of us. So there's no doubt that. And getting back to the issue of the polls, every time I see a poll to have his appellate rights protected.
Mr. Mayor, I've allowed you to go on for a long time here in the hope that you would ultimately answer my question, but you haven't yet.
Ted, what I'd like to tell the Attorney General is that we all are responsible for our actions.
What does that mean? You're the mayor, right? But if federal marshals were to come down here, they can count on the local police to back them up and support them. Is that
absolutely
correct?
Absolutely. Public officials will be here to maintain the order. Absolutely.
Very good, sir.
Sunglasses and a joint in her mouth are superimposed over Reno's face.
Congratulations. You played yourself.
A skit shows Reno busting through a cement wall.
Mayor Penelas, you may very well regret now what you said last week, but I want you to know you left a lot of us feeling incredibly disenfranchised from this community, and it's going to be very, very difficult to ever forgive you for that.
He was really a Shakespearean figure in that moment. He was Macbeth.
It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sounds and fury. Signifying nothing.
What do I do? How do I get myself out of this situation?
After 4 months of negotiation, it has come down to the Attorney General flying down to Florida in the late afternoon, personally negotiating with the boy's relatives. But after 3 hours, the Attorney General left without a resolution.
A defiant Lazaro Gonzalez made it clear he was not going to turn over Elion to his father.
His great-uncle Lazaro told Attorney General Janet Reno that the boy could be removed only by force.
Elion Gonzalez is being held unlawfully in Miami against his father's wishes.
I want to be clear that if we are compelled to enforce our order,
We intend to do so in a reasonable, measured way.
Reno has already put into action a peaceful plan for the transfer of Elion, based largely on this trial run.
A video shows the Branch Davidian compound in Waco, Texas, burning. April 22, 2000, 199 days until the election. Neighbors throw rocks and other items at agents as they drive in amidst a crowd of protesters. Agents in helmets and carrying batons run alongside the SUVs as they reach the home of Lazaro Gonzalez. Officers deploying pepper spray and mace keep the crowd pushed back. More officers stand in front of the house, guns at the ready. Armando Gutierrez walks through the melee, phone to his ear. An officer walks with him, a hand on his back. Gutierrez bends over and coughs. In the house, an agent points a gun at Elion and Donato Dalrymple hiding in a closet. A woman carries out the crying boy and hustles him into a waiting car. Protesters chase the retreating car, throwing furniture and crates.
No one was seriously hurt, but outside the house, for some of those who had been holding vigil day and night, the emotional wounds were deep.
Is that democracy? No, that's Castro tactics. You will turn Miami into Havana.
A skit on Saturday Night Live.
I would like to take a moment to talk to the exiled Cuban community in Miami who are so upset over the recent government action there, and extend this heartfelt message to them. Shut the hell up.
Hundreds protest on the streets. A dumpster is knocked over, fires are set, a bench is dragged into the street.
It's supposed to be nonviolent. I just called the police three times.
I'm burning this flag, like Clinton did.
It was a circus.
Police in riot gear push back the crowd.
Shit. Reno is motherfucker.
All right, Ms. Reno, are you ready?
Ready.
Go blue.
Go blue.
Words on a car back window read, Reno, asshole, lesbian. A policeman sprays a high-power water hose at protesters.
That's it. Let's move, 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 move.
South Park reenacts the taking of Elion.
Hand over the children! Happy Easter! Hand over the children!
Smoke billows on a street as police try to contain protesters. Mitchell Berger, attorney and fundraiser, Gore Lieberman 2000 campaign.
It was a very bad situation post-raid in the Cuban-American community. Emotions were inflamed. Mayor Pinellas helped to inflame those emotions.
I think, you know, despite this horrible episode, what's happened here is unforgivable.
And to the mayor of Miami, what's his name? You say you're ashamed of your new home, the United States. I'll tell you what, I'll buy the raft.
In Cuba, a man carries Elion off the plane.
When Elion was finally returned to Cuba and to his father, hell was going to freeze over among exile hardliners before they forgot this betrayal by Clinton Gore.
There was a lot of tension between Bill Clinton's Cuba policy and the exile community in Miami, and Al Gore, having been the vice president, inherited all of those tensions.
There was going to be a price to be paid.
A sign reads, Keep Elion Free. A fire burns on a street.
The Gore-Bush election was an opportunity for El Voto Castigo, the revenge vote.
It's a punishment vote. Remember to vote and punish these people.
El Voto Castigo, they called it, the punishment vote. Whom will Cuban-American voters punish? Al Gore and the Democrats.
I will fight for your loved ones, for your community, for the future of Florida and the United States.
George Bush, the luckiest politician in the history of America was handed this delicious plate of voters.
Vamos a ganar este estado de Florida y también vamos a ganar todos los estados en los Estados Unidos.
Compliments of what happened to Elian Gonzalez, and suddenly Armando Gutierrez, who had to choose not only a judge like he was used to doing, now he was allowed to choose the next president of the United States. This is the guy you vote for to punish. Castigo. El voto castigo. Talk about fortune.
September 6th.
It's the top political job in South Florida, and Alex Pinellas is determined to hang on to it.
There was an effort to fund his reelection campaign from Florida Democrats and national Democrats, and I certainly was helping to raise part of the money.
Pinellas, who's collected four times as much money as his main opponent, could spend $750,000 on TV and other advertising by the end of the campaign.
This was his last election as mayor, and he was looking to run for governor or senator afterwards. If he became an incumbent mayor, then there was no reason where he couldn't spend some political capital and help Gord on the national campaign.
It wasn't until 1:30 in the morning that Alex Pinellas could claim re-election in the first round of balloting.
I'm happy to tell you that we've won.
A headline, jubilant Pinellas calls victory a mandate.
There was now the critical 2 months of election, from Labor Day to Election Day, to help Vice President Gore gain as much of that Cuban percentage back.
From Alex Pinellas, you're always going to get leadership, even the most difficult of situations, whether the hurricanes or any other crisis, you're always going to get leadership from Alex Pinellas.
October 18th, 20 days until the election, Amandi.
A few weeks before the election, Alex Pinellas was supposed to calm down the declaration of El Voto Castigo by appearing with Hialeah Mayor Raul Martinez to bolster Hispanic support for the Gore campaign.
They asked me to stand with Alex at La Carreta in Hialeah. It was going to be some national event where all the Hispanic nationally would be supportive. And of course, you know, they wanted to get the media there. I said, okay, I'll be there at 11 o'clock in the morning, and I'll just be there as a second banana to Alex.
So Gore just had to convince Cuban Americans that he was truly on their side on the Elian argument, and he disagreed with Bill Clinton. And the only thing he really needed to make that happen was to have Alex Pinellas, the mayor of Miami-Dade County, the most important county for Cuban Americans in the country, to stand at his side and back him on that.
Vice President Gore flew in to hopefully collect on what he thought was Mr. Pinellas' word and accept Mayor Pinellas' endorsement.
Got there by 10:30, 10:45. Alex wasn't there. And we decided that we were going to do the press conference, which we did. Alex never showed up.
We were told that Mayor Pinellas was going to be going to Spain.
They probably thought he was going to be in the country. I probably expected that.
Hard to campaign for Al Gore when you're in Spain.
I said, wait a minute. Planes for Spain don't leave until 6 o'clock at night. This is 11 o'clock in the morning.
Reverse footage of a plane taking off appears. Elsewhere, Gore greets a large crowd.
Now Gore wakes up one day and says, what happened to Alex Pinellas? He's gone. He folded like a cheap suit.
Mr. Pinellas decided to leave Vice President Gore literally standing at the altar.
I was annoyed and pissed because you don't do that.
I went to rallies. I heard other people speak about Gore, but donde está Alex Pinellas? He was nowhere to be seen. Donde está Alex Pinellas?
A headline, Pinellas no show at rally.
When the going gets tough, Alex gets going.
Hank Williams Jr.
I got my boots and my jeans, guitar in my hand. Everybody knows
I'm a George W. man. I gotta get ready. Make everything right.
November 5th, 2 days until the election.
No Republican has won the presidency without Florida since Calvin Coolidge in 1924.
Florida was key. I mean, if we didn't win Florida, we wouldn't have won the election.
Thanks for coming. There's a huge crowd, which leads me to be able to say Florida is going to be Bush-Cheney country.
Didn't hurt to have your brother as the governor of Florida.
On the stump today, Bush rallied the crowds with Florida's governor, his brother Jeb. The younger Bush has led a huge get-out-the-vote effort here, and advisors believe Florida is the state that will propel them to victory.
A person that can get things done in Washington, D.C., that will eliminate the cynicism of the past and bring a new era for this country. My brother, George W. Bush, the next president of the United States.
The candidate poured it on thick, especially on Cuban voters, whose ears tune in to talk of Elian and Fidel Castro.
We will keep the pressure on Fidel Castro until the people are free.
South Florida was so important. Both candidates made multiple stops here the day before the election.
A sign reads, Florida wins with Gore. Gore and Tipper waved to supporters.
South Beach center stage for a late night rock and roll rally that Al Gore hopes will ignite last minute Florida voters.
If you want to win, vote for Gore and Lieberman. That was Stevie Wonder's lyric.
The entire 2000 presidential campaign for Al Gore culminates on the sands of Miami Beach, the last rally of the campaign, putting an exclamation point on the importance of Miami-Dade in this election.
I think this may be the most important election in my generation.
I didn't see Alex Pinellas at that rally, by the way.
But will it make a difference?
Florida was it. Everyone on both campaigns knew it was coming down to Florida.
November 7th, Election Day.
Good evening and welcome to what promises to be a long and exciting night.
This being billed as the polls close before the election as the closest election in a generation.
What happens tonight will set the nation's next agenda for the 21st century. There are many who believe that this election is not just about the next 4 years, but it may well decide the direction of our country for the next generation.
I was in charge of election night in Austin, and we had a party-like atmosphere. As the returns were coming in, there was great joy.
Bush picks up his first state in the South. Gore gets his first win in New England. But no call yet in what both campaigns say may be the key to this election, Florida. That race, the heat from it is hot enough to peel house paint.
At 10 to 7, I am sitting in the Fort Lauderdale airport to get on Southwest Airlines flight to Nashville.
Our John King is with the Gore campaign in Nashville.
The polls are going to close in 10 minutes.
The presidential race is crackling like a hickory fire here.
All eyes on Florida at this hour, Tim. Both campaigns made an enormous investment there.
By the time we landed in Tampa, they declared Florida for Gore. And we're celebrating.
Let's take a look back. We have not heard one word tonight about Ralph Nader. We have
Mike, excuse me 1 second. I'm so sorry to interrupt you. Florida goes for Al Gore.
Al Gore wins the state of Florida. Give him the first big state momentum of the evening.
You can bet that Governor Bush would be madder than a rain-dome rooster that his brother, the governor, wasn't able to carry this state for him.
That is a very, very, very important state for Al Gore. And now the pressure is on George W. Bush.
If Gore had lost Florida, you might be saying sayonara to his hopes.
All of a sudden, there were reports, well, there's issues, there are problems.
Passengers are getting off flights, emerging from their airborne information vacuums, only to learn that Bush now appears to have the edge.
When we land in Nashville, now they're not so sure that we won in Florida.
The Bush campaign is now contesting the projected victory for Al Gore in the state of Florida.
In the Austin Hotel, where Governor Bush is watching the results with his family, there is a strong sense that the race in Florida is not over.
Florida, for example, I'm waiting till they count all the votes. And I think America ought to wait before they count all the votes, too.
What the networks give us, the networks take it away. NBC News is now taking Florida out of Vice President Gore's column and putting it back in the too close to call column.
Florida is back in play.
Florida is back in the toss-up category.
Whew, what a night.
It's too close to call.
It was either going to be a tie or maybe a little advantage to Gore. Fox News changed the argument.
Fox News now projects George W. Bush, the winner in Florida, and thus, it appears, the winner of the presidency of the United States.
That was actually George Bush's cousin who made the call at Fox News. The other station started to call it for Bush.
In a time of peace and prosperity like this, it's possible
for
the country to have
Doris,
such a division
Doris,
as they
Doris,
do.
Doris, Doris, Doris. George Bush is the president-elect of the United States. He has won the state of Florida.
ABC News is now going to project that Florida goes to Mr. Bush.
George Bush will become the 43rd president of the United States.
Sip it, savor it, cup it, photostat it, underline it in red, press it in a book, put it in an album, hang it on a wall. George Bush is the next president of the United States.
This is the scene in Austin, Texas tonight. It's been a long, suspenseful evening.
Gore has, in fact, called President-elect Bush. No word on what was said in that conversation, but that it was very direct.
Boom. He goes out and concedes an election that he has won.
Gore didn't want to hold up the nation. He's a Boy Scout in that regard.
Al Gore appeared to be conceding.
There is no documentary evidence that he has lost.
Why the hell would you concede? What do you have to lose? Just stay quiet.
We're told Gore is on his way here. Again, we were told that about 10, 15 minutes ago. We haven't seen him yet, but it's supposed to be soon.
Vice President Gore's motorcade is bound for the War Memorial, where he plans to admit defeat and say a few comforting words to his supporters.
I was one of the people to call up the vice president, and I'm screaming in the phone saying, you can't concede. There's still outstanding votes that we still haven't counted. I don't care what the TV stations are saying.
The margin in Florida is now said to be a mere 600 votes.
Something screwy is going on in Florida. We know large amounts of precincts are not showing up on the Secretary of State's website.
This is clearly no time for the vice president to make a public concession speech.
The votes hadn't been counted yet. The votes hadn't been counted yet.
From the HBO movie, sir. Recount.
Sir, it's urgent.
What is it, David?
Daly needs to speak to you. He just needs 5 minutes.
Look, I just spoke to Bush. He's waiting for me to give
Mr.
his
vice
speech.
President.
I'm not going to keep
please,
him waiting.
Please, 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 Mr. Vice President. There's a problem with the numbers in Florida.
The crowd has gotten extremely quiet as journalists are discussing why the vice president has not come out and make the concession speech that they all expected him to make.
And then he took it back.
The vice president has recalled the governor and retracted his concession.
And I thought, oh, this is going to be a shit show. This is going to be a total shit show.
The race is not yet over.
The circumstances have changed. I need to withdraw my concession until the situation is clear, Gore says, in what quickly becomes a tense call. Bush is said to be indignant.
I thought it was an interesting comment he made, and I felt like I was fully prepared to go out and give a speech and thanking my supporters.
Sources close to Gore recall Bush saying that his brother Jeb assured him he'd won. Gore responds, your little brother does not have the last word on this.
The Associated Press believes that the uncounted votes in Broward and Palm Beach counties could allow a change of the lead in the Florida vote.
Hello, 911, cardiac arrest unit, please.
Brokaw turns to Tim Russert.
Broward and Palm Beach are the uncounted votes. What if this goes the other way?
No, it's only 317. We're here. Cameras
right.
are hot.
Folks, it's 3:30 in the morning here in the East. But the excitement level has just risen once again.
Brokaw looks at a paper and smiles. Three CNN reporters laugh with him.
Let's go home.
We're thinking we're going to send you some of our cold pizza. Would that make you feel better?
No. Tim gets his board out.
Russert holds up a whiteboard that reads, Florida, Florida, Florida.
Brief. For those of you who went to bed or started going off to brush your teeth and come back and say, hello, what's this, Dan Rather? Well, I got to tell you, folks, A, I don't know. B, I don't know anybody who does know.
TV3 Control, okay, I want you to pull back Florida, and I want you to say it is equally probable that either candidate can win in Florida.
All right, we're officially saying that Florida is too close to call.
We are going to take Florida back into the too close to call column.
That means he is short of the 270 electoral votes that he needs to win.
Florida Secretary of State says the margin in Florida, get this, folks, and hold on to the bedstead or something, 629 votes. We could be going to recount city.
Just an hour or so ago, the TV networks called this race for Governor Bush. It now appears that their call was premature. Under Florida state law, this triggers an automatic recount. Our campaign continues.
Comedy Central's Indecision 2000, November 8th, one day after the election. Bush lead, 987 votes.
Once again, we're talking about Florida. Controversy surrounding the vote raises a myriad of issues about our democracy, and while there is much disagreement about how to proceed from here, nearly everyone seems to agree on one thing, and that is, holy f***ing
Stewart, eyes rolled back, shakes his head repeatedly. Bryant Gumbel.
This morning, we frankly still don't have a winner. If you are just waking up and just tuning in, you should know that after a long night of swing votes, the presidential race is frankly still too close to call.
Well, what's the problem with the election? Voter fraud, electoral college?
The white man?
All along, we thought there was a possibility that George W. Bush might win the popular vote, but Al Gore could win the electoral vote. As of right now, Al Gore has won the popular vote.
Out of something like 97 million votes cast, we're looking at a difference of 213,000 votes.
But it is the electoral college that matters there. George W. Bush could still win.
They both are still short of the needed 270 because of the state of Florida.
All that matters is Florida, because mathematically, it takes Florida's 25 votes to put either man into the White House.
In my mind, Gore would have won. I mean, he won the popular vote.
Right, Chris. By the popular vote, the majority of the people are saying, we want Al Gore to be our next president. But the Electoral College, which is run by the white man, is saying, we don't care what you niggas want.
Almost 6 million votes in Florida, 987 separate the two candidates.
And so as a result, the state of Florida, by law, has gone to an automatic recount.
You know, Florida has always been a troublemaker all year. Hurricanes, Ileana Gonzalez, Alonzo Mourning's kidney, NSYNC, Booty Bass. All that shit from Florida.
Let's be clear again. Whoever wins in Florida wins the White House.
So what do you think the answer is?
I think the answer is fuck Florida.
Wanda Sykes stands at a U.S. map.
Chris, look. It's right down there at the bottom. All you gotta do, lop it off.
Why can't we just cut this state adrift and let it crash into Cuba?
Bugs Bunny saws off Florida.
South America, take it away.
Across Florida and the nation, this cliffhanger vote to many like a sporting event. At 9 a.m., Bush's lead stands at 941 votes. By 11:23 a.m., 799 votes. Then back up to 830 votes. But by 12:30 p.m., Bush's lead slips again to 795 votes. 2:30 p.m., Bush's lead down further to 787 votes. By 4:25 p.m., Bush's lead plunges to 341, with only five more counties left to report.
In a state as populous and diverse as Florida, we were scratching our heads to think that it could even be that close.
Now to the woman who is in the crosshairs in the spotlight.
Catherine Harris is about to learn what real pressure is all about.
She's the Secretary of State, Catherine Harris.
The Gore campaign has already compared her to a Soviet commissar.
Tonight, the question of who will be the next president is right on her desk.
Catherine Harris was the chair of the Bush campaign, and she was the Secretary of State.
Harris was the state co-chair of George Bush's presidential campaign. Today, Governor Jeb Bush said she is doing a good job.
I think she's doing the right thing.
Two Democratic legislators told ABC News they now think she is trying to hand the election to George Bush.
Is there some concern in the Bush camp that putting it in her hands, a Republican, the co-chairperson of the Bush campaign in Florida, will tarnish the results?
You were Governor Bush's co-campaign chair in Florida. Seems to me you could be accused of political cronyism.
Do I know who has officially won the election? Yes. Am I going to announce it? No. Am I going to enjoy watching that Tennessee robot cry when he hears the results? Yes. Does that make me partisan? I don't think so.
So here you have the woman who is responsible for counting the ballots, who's like this with Jeb Bush.
It's rather third world-like.
In a clear sign, Democrats nor Republicans trust the other. Both parties are sending in former secretaries of state to oversee the recount. Warren Christopher for the Democrats, James Baker for the Republicans.
Warren Christopher sat us all down and said, this is the world's greatest democracy. We have a dispute about who is to be its next president. We will conduct ourselves on our side of the ledger as if this is the world's greatest democracy.
And I don't see any threat to our Constitution. Indeed, what we're doing is a constitutional process. There's no constitutional crisis. We're proceeding in accordance with the Constitution and laws, and we'll continue to do so.
Warren Christopher, who was virtually petrified by that time, came down here thinking this was some kind of high-minded constitutional debate. He didn't understand Florida politics. I'm not sure he understood politics at all.
Roger Stone, Republican political operative.
Is politics about uniting people?
Politics is about winning.
Roger Stone has always been a shadow figure in the Republican Party nationally. He's always been known to be the fellow you would want to call if it's something you didn't want anyone in your campaign to get close to.
The assistant for Jim Baker called me and she said, Mr. Baker would like you to go to Florida and help on the recount. How soon can you leave?
Beyond the closeness of the vote in Florida, there are also questions about irregularities at polling places and alleged problems with the ballots themselves.
So I packed my bags and I headed first for Palm Beach County.
In West Palm Beach, voters were protesting what they say was a confusing ballot, and they want to vote again. Al Gore's name appeared on the left, Pat Buchanan's slightly above on the right. Some say when they went to select Gore, they mistakenly punched Buchanan.
19,000 ballots were tossed out because they contained a double punch.
Hundreds of voters take to the streets, where election officials have tossed out those 19,000 ballots punched twice, cast by voters like Robert Hirsch.
I cast a vote for Gore, but at the same time, I must have punched the Buchanan column as well.
Only an idiot would vote for Pat Buchanan by mistake.
Butterfly ballots and right. The little old ladies who voted by error for Pat Buchanan. That was the worst horror since the Holocaust, and it was terrible.
It's kind of caveat emptor. I guess it is buyer beware.
Are you suggesting they did not intend to vote for Pat Buchanan?
Pat Buchanan suggested they didn't intend to vote for Pat Buchanan.
If the two candidates they pushed were Buchanan and Gore, almost certainly those are Al Gore's votes and not mine.
You know, America's gone through a wormhole when Pat Buchanan is the voice of fairness and reason. I'm sorry, it just... We are living in a freak zone.
There was more than enough legal and political talent to see Palm Beach through. So I called Baker and I said, you know, everything here seems to be under control. And he said, good. I want you to go down to Miami-Dade. Things down there are really screwed up.
Brad Blakeman, Bush-Cheney campaign operative.
It was going to be shenanigans and mischief. It was likely to be in Miami-Dade. So it made sense to go where it's likely to be stolen.
He had this iconic moment, did Tim Russert on NBC, when he said, it all comes down to Florida, Florida, Florida. He might as well have said, it all comes down to Miami, Miami, Miami.
November 14th, 7 days after the election.
All right, here is a quick summary of today's major developments. George W. Bush now leading Al Gore by just 290 votes. This number will inevitably change before it's all over, which way we simply do not know.
A confident and determined Al Gore making extremely clear he is not close to conceding this election.
When people cast votes, the votes should be counted. And there are more than enough uncounted votes to decide the outcome of this election. There are thousands of them. And the margin is in the hundreds. If you ignore the votes, you ignore democracy itself.
One of the central issues of Al Gore's contest of the Florida election involves thousands of ballots in Miami-Dade and Palm Beach counties that showed no vote for president in either the election night machine count or the automatic recount. Election professionals call these ballots undervotes.
Miami-Dade County, ground zero in the Gore campaign search for discarded votes. More than 5% of the ballots here, say Democrats, are in the drawer marked no vote for president. Rejected. Election officials call that an undervote.
That's what's in the parlance called an undervote, but it's a vote.
At issue, about 10,750 ballots that were counted by machines without votes being recorded for either candidate.
It makes absolutely no sense that 10,000 people would go to the polls during a presidential election and not vote for a president.
People do not stand in line for 7 hours to vote for their city commissioner.
Voters who choose not to cast a vote for president have that right. And no one else has the right to make their choice for them.
We found a flaw in the machine design that cost hundreds of votes to Al Gore.
Dade County had an antiquated IBM punch card voting system.
Archival footage shows a woman demonstrating how to use the punch card system.
Which IBM will tell you, if you vote at the end of the day and the machines aren't cleared out, it will only show the dimple because the card cannot punch all the way through because the chads, as they're called, are filling up the machine.
The so-called pregnant or dimpled ballots. Do they show voters' intent to select Gore as Democrats claim? Or are they simply an indentation on the ballot from an indecisive voter, as Republicans claim?
And that's why you had dimpled chads and hanging chads and pregnant chads.
The tiny bits of paper that could pick the president. So much fuss over Chad.
Now to the land of the hanging Chad.
I had to go to the doctor today. You know why? I have a hanging Chad.
The question of what to do with these ballots that are
pregnant or dimpled.
Dimpled Chads.
Dimples? Hanging Chads?
Oh, yes. There's a right to vote in this country. There's not a right to indent. And that's what a lot of people did.
The race comes down to the Chads.
A large majority of the undervotes came from underserviced counties. They don't have the machines. They don't have the personnel. They don't clear out the chads. Gore won these precincts. Poor voters vote on poor voting machines. Rich voters vote on state-of-the-art voting machines. Welcome to America.
As the national debate over the vote count goes on, the late-night comedians say, count us in.
I want to have an impromptu and candid conversation, totally off the cuff. Just give my guys a second to set up the teleprompter.
Saturday Night Live, 8 days after the election.
Okay. All right. Everything's set, Mr. Vice President.
This has been an extraordinary 8 days for the American people. There is a simple reason that Florida law, and the law in many other states, calls for a careful check by real people of the machine results in elections like this one.
Governor Bush, why have you consistently refused to meet with me so we can end this political infighting? 'Cause.
The reason? Machines can sometimes misread or fail to detect the way ballots are cast. And when there are serious doubts, checking the machine count with a careful hand count is accepted far and wide as the best way to know the true intentions of the voters.
Why can't we have all the counties in Florida conduct a hand count so the will of the people is heard? 'Cause. Oh, come on, George.
Democrats wanted to count the votes, and Republicans did not.
We should both call on all our supporters to prepare themselves to close ranks as Americans and unite the country behind the winner as soon as this process is completed.
As the machines are still counting votes in Florida today, the Gore campaign ups the ante, demanding hand counts.
The issue was getting the votes counted. The initial thing was to make sure that the canvassing board would agree to recount.
The Miami-Dade canvassing board was the focus because they had more than 10,000 undervotes.
Miami is unique in that we don't have an elected secretary of election. When something happens in a recount situation, we actually have in place, before election time, a three-judge panel. Now, we call it a three-judge panel, but they're not all judges.
Lawrence King, David Leahy, and Miriam Lear. Leahy was the supervisor of elections, and the other two were county judges.
David Leahy reported to Mayor Pinellas, and the canvassing board was working on the 18th floor of Government Center, which Mayor Pinellas controls.
And they're in charge of setting the standards, setting the rules.
We don't have standards for looking at what is a vote or what is not not a vote.
They kind of make up the rules as they go a little bit.
Three somewhat obscure Miami officials suddenly had immense power.
While Florida's other counties started their recount almost immediately in Miami-Dade County, something strange was going on.
Quite frankly, based on what I heard, I don't feel prepared to really give an intelligent answer.
The votes were not being recounted.
Somebody faxed to me an editorial that was in the Havana newspaper about the election in Florida, and the headline was Banana Republic. Now, when the Cubans start making fun of our election process,
Elian went the wrong place.
So Elian, that's right.
It's day 10 trillion in the Florida election debacle. I say we give it one more week, then we give ourselves back to England.
And now, under pressure from the Gore campaign, Miami-Dade County has reversed course.
This afternoon, the canvassing board voted unanimously to go ahead and hold this hand count.
I'll vote yes in concurrence with the recount of all ballots in Dade County by hand.
This is a huge victory for the Gore campaign.
In Miami-Dade County, election workers are preparing for the monumental task of counting every ballot by hand.
The seals cracked on the ballot trays in Miami-Dade as this morning, this county joins Broward and Palm Beach in this huge undertaking.
Look, everybody, it's Vice President Al Gore, everybody.
I just want to say how excited I am to be here. Conan, it's like that Gloria Gaynor song, I Will Survive, when she sings, I Will Survive.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I got that, yeah.
And then in that second verse, when she sings, every vote in Dade County must be counted.
Sir, that's not in the song.
It's in the live version.
No, it's not.
George W. Bush filed the first lawsuit.
The fate of the presidency hangs in the balance today before Florida's Supreme Court. This afternoon, attorneys for George W. Bush will argue the hand recounts going on in three heavily Democratic counties should be stopped. Lawyers for Al Gore will try to persuade the justices to let the hand counts continue and to include them in Florida's final tally.
I just assumed that by November 20th, the election would be over with, but I guess not.
With his presidential hopes on hold, George W. Bush went back to the Texas Capitol today, turning a day at the office into a photo op, his troops aggressively challenging Vice President Gore's in and out of court, their main goal to thoroughly discredit the ballot counting process as flawed and corrupted. What they don't say is that they also fear that a recount could give the edge to Vice President Al Gore.
While Democrats are sitting around trying to figure out how to do the right thing, Republicans are figuring out how to win.
It was a three-pronged effort, what I call a stool. And the three legs that we saw was the courts, the recount, and then the street.
Camped out in a motorhome in the middle of the media staging area, you would think they would want to talk about their mission.
The Bush operation.
Right. It's a Bush operation? Yeah. What goes on inside this trailer?
Hello. Can't talk to you right now.
In all, an army of 75 operatives came to Miami to shape public opinion.
I would have a motorhome and used as a staging area and also as a place for us to work out.
You had to show a
physical presence. You had to show grassroots support for your point of view.
If you want to sway public opinion, then you have to take it to the people.
We have freedom of speech too, and we're watching you. You're not going to steal this election.
We were fighting for victory, and we weren't going to be outmaneuvered.
This was ground zero, and the whole election would end up hinging on what happened in Miami-Dade.
We wanted to take this to farce because it was so farcical. We had T-shirts printed. Every couple of days, we had different slogans. Don't be had by a Chad, who let the Chads out. And I had one of those shirts made with a banana on it saying that Florida is a banana republic.
I don't know who came up with the Sore Loser Man logo and sign, but it was brilliant.
I came up with the slogan of Sore Loser Man, which was a take on Gore Lieberman. By doing that, it also created enthusiasm, and people were coming down for the spectacle in the theater.
And the Republicans used Cuban Talk Radio to mobilize their foot soldiers to Government Center in downtown Miami.
Spanish language radio in Miami-Dade is enormously powerful and very effective and extremely efficient at reaching precisely the people you want to reach.
There was something still that was burning inside the souls of so many Cuban Americans. Because it was pretty powerless when Elian was taken away. They felt they have been betrayed. Now we can get something. Now we can stomp our feet and stop Al Gore from becoming president.
My wife, who is a fluent Spanish speaker, did a tour of the Spanish language radio stations, and they were likening the situation in Miami-Dade to the situation in Havana. This is a takeover, like when Fidel took over.
And in the same way that Elian Gonzalez had been stolen and sent back to Cuba, the election was being stolen, and a call for many Cuban Americans to go defend the ballots in the way they couldn't defend Elian Gonzalez.
The messaging, first and foremost, is Bush won. The messaging is that Democrats are trying to overturn a national election. And one very popular message from the Cuban community was, you know, this was a coup.
It's overheated rhetoric. It worked extremely well.
Bush for president! Bush on the line!
The talk in Miami at the time was that somehow the Gore faction were going to steal the election.
If I'm about to steal an election, the first thing I'm going to do is say they are going to steal.
We'd like America to know how the presidential election is being stolen at this time in Miami-Dade County, Florida.
It started to become apparent, even someone like myself who voted for Bush and wanted Bush to win, in part because of Elian, something strange was going on. And it wasn't necessarily the message that we were being given that somehow the Democrats were the ones who were doing the coup. It was the other way around. If you say Bush won, then everybody's going to say, oh, Bush won, and these guys are trying to steal the election. See, it's all about what you call it. And man, Republicans are so good at that. They're just better at manipulating the situation to put themselves in a place where they're seen as the winners and the victims at the same time.
All Americans want a fair and accurate count of the votes in Florida. And I believe if there is a fair and accurate count of the votes in Florida, we will prevail.
Gore underestimated the Bush campaign. He fought in the courts and he fought in the recount center, but he actually told his people to stand down and not turn out in the streets. He did it to his peril.
I was advised that Reverend Jackson said, we're going to take to the streets. And Vice President Gore said, if you take to the streets, there's potential for violence. Please don't do that.
We were sure that we were going to be met with street brawls outside the recount centers, and that we were probably going to be overrun. And it never came to that.
This kind of thoughtful, conscientious liberalism, they're just completely played up for the other side.
Good to see you.
It is good to see you, my friend.
After shaking hands, a man and his associates all shoot the other man.
They turned out to be wusses. They got their ass beaten by the Republicans.
The recount in Florida was a street brawl for the presidency of the United States.
And for more now on what's happening today in Florida, we're going to go back to our Bill Hemmer, who's still in Tallahassee. Hi, Bill.
Hey, guys, it's starting to rain. Bummer.
The question of what to do with these ballots that are dimpled or pregnant will take center stage in the courtroom right behind me later this morning. A judge is going to be asked by the Democratic Party to order elections officials to make those ballots count.
Late into the night, the court worked. Crush grew outside, tired, cold, anticipating an answer. 4 hours after sundown, it came.
The court holds that amended certifications from the county canvassing boards must be accepted by the Election Canvassing Commission through 5 p.m. on November 26 if the Secretary of State's office is open for the special purpose of receiving amended certifications.
So the recounts will count. It's a victory for the Democrats.
In Miami-Dade, the biggest problem now? Meeting that five-day deadline. With a break for Thanksgiving, they had planned on finishing 10 days from now.
I think Thanksgiving is going to be disrupted for a lot of very dedicated public servants, but we all know how important this is. We all know the stakes, and we all want it done right.
The Bush campaign fears it could result in a victory for Democrat Al Gore.
I firmly believe that the will of the people should prevail. And I am gratified that the court's decision will allow us to honor that simple constitutional principle.
How many times must you count a ballot before it's a vote for Al Gore? And how many chads must fall to the ground before you don't count them no more? The answer, my friend, may be on CNN. The answer may be on CNN.
In Dade County, the undercount, ballots with holes not completely punched through, will be examined individually by the county's canvassing board.
The rules were changing minute by minute.
You don't know what you're doing. You count his votes. You count her votes over there. Excuse me. Did you count? If you're not sure if a person meant to vote for what they did, you put it in the milk in the jar.
Republican fears and Democratic hopes ride on these ballots. An estimated 10,700 set aside, not counted, because the machines couldn't read them.
This has caused some consternation among the Bush camp.
Government Center, Miami-Dade County.
We had a meeting in the trailer, and they were telling us what it was about to unfold. If Gore got ahead, that it would change the dynamic of not only the recount, but also the PR effort.
I was working out of a trailer. I was using a walkie-talkie that worked not terribly well to keep in touch with my contacts inside. All we wanted in Miami-Dade was for the count to be over.
I said, well, why don't we do what Democrats would do? Why don't we do some civil disobedience?
I was on the 18th floor working on the recount, and the next thing you know, the elevator doors open.
A scene from the recount movie shows a crowd of people pouring out from the elevators.
And then they start chanting,
stop the count, stop the fraud, stop the count.
Have everybody's attention. There's a full protest out in the lobby, and I think it could escalate out of control.
Republican demonstrators stormed the hallways and demanded access to the recount room.
They were shouting and yelling,
let us see the ballots! Let us see the ballots!
And then they started pounding the glass.
World is watching. World is watching.
And that's when we said, what the fuck is this?
This whole thing turned into un arroz con mango, which is Cuban slang for clusterfuck.
Who are these people and what are they doing?
And in the middle of this, I go up to this very, very thick window and I said,
hi, I'm a lawyer with the recount. I need a sample ballot, please.
I got a report from my contact that a Democratic official and an unidentified man were trying to take a sheaf of ballots.
It's marked, by the way, official Democratic Party training ballot. It's a sample ballot.
Into an ante room to the side, that had no windows in which there were no observers.
And there was this one Republican woman, and she looks at me, and in a loud voice, she says,
"He stole a ballot!
He stole a ballot!"
More scenes from Recount play.
The mob turns right on me.
Republicans accuse Joe Geller, the chairman of the Democratic Party, of stealing a ballot. A chase ensues.
He's being confronted by these kind of thuggish guys.
It was pretty scary. People were yelling, screaming, and actually physically pushing and jumping right into me.
I just thought, really, that I was going to get knocked down and stomped, and that maybe that would be the end of me.
Those were the pictures that were being played all over the nation as Miami being a banana republic.
The people inside were terrified.
Given Miami's history, where taking the wrong side of a political issue might cost you your limb or your life, they were right to be scared.
I call Alex Benelis, and I said, "Alex, I am on my way, and you and I have to stop this." And he said, "No, don't come. I'm not going to get involved."
Benelis certainly had a moment where he could have walked in and said, "We're doing what's right."
He could have called the police department. They would have moved those people out. He just melted.
It's unclear what the actions of Alex Benelis, who was then the county mayor, couldn't really figure out where he was.
Again, where was the mayor?
The invisible Alex Benelis, who just seemed to come and then go.
Around that time, Alex Benelis was in Tallahassee, and according to reports, he was caucusing. He was meeting with Republicans. Republicans, mind you.
Al Cardenas was the chairman of the Florida Republican Party. Alex Benelis' people were talking with him, and there was speculation that Alex was meeting with Mario Diaz-Balart, then a very powerful state lawmaker who, in fact, had a big hand in drawing congressional districts and was going to be drawing them for the 2002 election, that they would carve out a congressional district for Alex Benelis, a Democrat.
The salt and pepper haired Al Cardenas sits in front of a window.
He blinks and tightens his lips.
Very interesting. After the fact accurate here, I don't remember that.
If that's true, to say it's unfortunate and disappointing would be polite. It is just so disheartening to hear that.
After he lunched at the Governor's Club in Tallahassee with a Republican lawmaker and met with others instrumental in drawing a congressional district, Benelis might win. Suddenly, the Miami-Dade Canvassing Board, one of whom works for Benelis, voted to stop the manual recount.
This is a key moment, and I want you to listen here. What has just happened is the canvassing board in Miami-Dade County has decided to stop the hand recount.
My vote is that we not proceed and that we allow the certification that we did on November 8th after the second automated recount be the certification submitted to the Secretary of State.
The board finally decided they did not have the time to count all of the ballots before the Florida Supreme Court's 5 p.m. Sunday deadline.
They have plenty of time to count. They absolutely have plenty of time to count them.
I do not believe that there is time to carry out a complete full manual recount.
The idea that they didn't have enough time to count 10,750 undervote ballots in 4 days, that's horseshit.
And with that, they declared their work done again.
Recount in Dade County, done.
The canvassing board has flip-flops at least 3 times that I can count. First, they decided not to do a recount. Then they decided that they would do a full recount of 680,000 ballots. Then they were going to limit it to 10,000. And now they've decided to call it off completely. Now Dade County looks like a complete mess. And deservedly, it is the laughing stock of the country.
The canvassing, the recount, was stopped. midstream. Can you think of something more undemocratic than that?
The most clear-cut, obvious decision, which very simply is count all the votes. They reversed it.
The video that I saw on the television today, I thought was pretty shocking. I mean, a crowd of people going in there, storming that room, trying to take it over, and forcing that board to change its rules. I mean, we haven't seen that kind of an angry crowd since Elian Gonzalez was rescued from Miami. Is that what passes for democracy in Miami?
A dangerous dimension to this campaign was introduced where you had really the threat of violence in a lot of ways, scaring away many of those who believe that the process should be able to work.
These demonstrations were clearly designed to intimidate and to prevent a simple count of votes from going forward.
From their perspective, I can understand where they thought that we might have been intimidated, and our vote was based on that intimidation. The fact is that it wasn't.
As for Mr. Leahy, let's just get the record straight. He belongs in the Cowards Hall of Fame.
I simply made my decision based on the fact that we could not certify in time.
We got the message across, and the recount was stopped.
I think justice won. I think the American people won.
At the time, it appeared spontaneous. Angry residents denied the right to see their votes recounted. But the reality is, it was an orchestrated Republican protest.
The press is in! The press is in! Let us in! Let us in! Let us in!
This was not an ad hoc, impromptu kind of operation.
It looks like chicken shit. It looks like a bunch of people who dress well and, you know, shower twice a day flipped democracy.
And most were not even from here.
Are you local? Are you out of my guide?
Her guide, a Republican public relations officer, cut that conversation short.
You know, there was a suggestion made by the Republicans, by the way, that those were, quote, local Cuban-American activists who were upset by the situation. Nobody was in Guayaberas. Nobody had an accent. They were dressed in tweeds, and they all had square heads.
In Miami-Dade, the majority of people who took part, yes, were seasoned political operatives.
The mob that the GOP sent to stop that count in Miami was billed at the time as a spontaneous grassroots uprising, one that just happened to be made up of no one at all from Miami, all Republican national operatives, including at least a half dozen who, according to IRS records, received payment for their services from the Bush-Cheney recount committee.
We did such a great job that the campaign in Austin actually thought we had lost our minds and that we were doing something that was not well thought out. But when we told them that, of course, it was all well thought out and pre-planned, they were satisfied, obviously, with the result.
It was run with care and with shrewdness and evil intent, and it worked.
It became known as the famous Brooks Brothers riot, because Republicans are, generally speaking, better dressed than Democrats.
Roger Stone has claimed that he was in the motorhome in Winnebago helping to coordinate and encourage the Brooks Brothers riot. Is that accurate?
No, it is not. Roger Stone is full of shit. Had he shown up, he would have been thrown out. No, the Winnebago, he was not in. The Winnebago, I rented. And he was not part of the Bush effort. I had not seen Roger Stone down in the recount, although I've heard he's taken credit for things that he hasn't done, true to Roger Stone.
Please give me a fucking break. Don't use that.
The idea that you would take pride in being an operative who stopped an election reveals that for the Republicans, elections are nothing more than a dirty trick to hold on to power.
One man's dirty trick is another man's civic participation.
That Bush operation trailer has moved on.
The Brooks Brothers riot is a travesty. The fact that there was not enough police to prevent that from happening, and that Alex Pinellas did not prevent violence from ending American votes from being counted, it is to this day a searing travesty.
I'm proud of what we did. It was necessary that it be done. And but for perhaps a little of what we did, maybe the outcome would have been different.
I certainly heard some Democrats whispering yesterday about
wondering if there were political pressure brought to bear on those three canvassing board members.
We learned later that Judge King and Judge Lehrer, two of the three members of the canvassing board, had been clients of Armando Gutierrez.
Judge Miriam Lehrer and Judge Lawrence King, two-thirds of the Dade County Canvassing Board, were clients of Armando Gutierrez.
I didn't know that.
Wow. That's fucked up. That kind of bullshit local politics happens all the time, but it's rare that it has a national impact and an international impact.
Do you feel comfortable saying Armando would never have called Judge Lehrer and Judge King and intervened?
You're kidding me. I wouldn't say that.
You wouldn't say what?
That Armando would not pick up the phone and call or show up at their house. You kidding me?
No, he was talking to them.
I'm sorry?
There's no doubt he was talking to them.
Why isn't there a doubt?
Because if you know Armando Gutierrez, you know he was talking to them.
It's South Florida. Anything is possible.
The judges denied they were pressured by anyone. And Armando Gutierrez said that he had not spoken to anybody on the canvassing board. And that he had actually been out of town on a trip with his son named Chad.
Another fixed election in a town that's famous for fixed elections. You know, it used to be Chicago was the most corrupt city in America. Then it was New York, the mobsters and all the other, and Tammany Hall. And now, Miami's number one, baby. We may not be the best, but we're the goddamn crookedest on the face of the earth.
This morning, Al Gore was in a lighthearted mood as he helped to load food for Thanksgiving dinners for needy families in the Washington area. That was before the recount in Miami-Dade was halted.
This decision by the Miami-Dade Canvassing Board could be the last big blow for the Gore campaign.
Now, this is one of the motherlode areas for potential Gore votes that hadn't been counted the first couple times around.
With just 930 votes separating the two candidates statewide, the Gore camp loses 157 votes gained here so far, and the potential for hundreds more.
Republicans have done everything they can to delay the hand count, to run out the clock.
Democrats turn to the 3rd District Court of Appeals, filing an emergency petition asking the court to force the Miami-Dade Canvassing Board to hand count its votes. The Court of Appeals says no, but Democrats vow to go to the Supreme Court.
After weeks of setbacks, Al Gore wins a battle in his bid for the presidency. The Florida Supreme Court justices ordered officials in all of Florida's 67 counties to hand count ballots that did not register a vote for the president.
In addition, the circuit court shall enter orders ensuring the inclusion of the additional 215 legal votes for Vice President Gore in Palm Beach County and the 168 additional legal votes from Miami-Dade County.
Now the margin is 154, according to the Florida State Supreme Court.
Florida Supreme Court comes back and says, everybody recounts everywhere.
Boxes of ballots are brought in and workers start recounting.
And then we're up there right in the middle of doing it, and the Republican comes tearing down the hall and says the Supreme Court just halted the recount.
We have to stop. Even in the middle of the machines. Okay.
Campaign 2000, CBS News.
Granting George W. Bush's request, the United States Supreme Court jumped into the battle for the White House today, ordering an abrupt halt to a hand recount of thousands of ballots in Florida.
December 12th, 35 days after the election.
This is an ABC News special report. A Nation Waits. Now reporting, Peter Jennings.
Good evening, everybody. I'll make it quick and simple to beginning. The Supreme Court of the United States has reversed the decision of the Florida Supreme Court on a very narrow majority, 5 justices to 4.
I read the Supreme Court opinion and said, we're fucked.
Ballots have you counted?
Ian Sancho oversaw the recount of the Miami-Dade undervotes close to halfway through before the stay stopped them. Sancho was disappointed.
Because we were discovering valid votes cast in the presidential race that citizens
of the United States of America who made a good faith effort to go down and cast those votes expect to have their votes counted.
The Supreme Court says, we're not going to let the count continue. And suddenly George Bush became the president of the United States.
The final margin in the state of Florida, 5 votes to 4 votes.
I won fair and square. That's right, state of Florida, read my mouth. I am the president of the United States.
And by the way, Florida, do us a favor, stay out of the next election, okay? Just, we don't need it.
Interesting fun fact about the election. Al Gore got more votes nationally, so that's kind of funny. And kind of funny. I bet Al Gore would get a big kick out of that.
The election was lost in many different places, but it was stolen in Miami.
This was a game of gotcha. I've been telling you since the 8th of November, they stole it fair and square. They stole it a half a dozen different ways, at least, because the fix was in.
The Republicans wanted to pull off the perfect crime. You needed the right people to be in the right places to do so. From Armando Gutierrez, to Roger Stone, to Catherine Harris, to Jeb Bush, all the way up to a Supreme Court justice appointed by George W. Bush's father, it was a royal flush.
You know, it's one thing to bullshit people because you're a great bullshitter and you've got a good message.
I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
It's another thing to literally scheme your way into getting a result that is not perhaps the proper result. And that's what happened during that election.
And tonight, for the sake of our unity as a people and the strength of our democracy, I offer my concession.
After endless court battles, the Florida vote has been certified by Florida Secretary of State Catherine Harris, giving the state and the presidency to George W. Bush by a total of 537 votes. Wow. That's a landslide if you're running for student council treasurer.
She certified a 537 vote total.
The margin was 537, a number that for any Democrat over the age of 35 is stamped into their head.
537 votes. I could probably go and talk to personally 537 people that I know.
537 votes. That's stunning.
What happened to Al Gore is very simple. He won the state of Florida, but Miami-Dade made sure that at least 10,000 ballots never saw the light of day.
All of the dimple chads were never counted, ever, ever to this day.
And the takeaway is close elections can be stolen.
It's now clear that the Miami-Dade recount being ended was the seminal event that decided the 2000 presidential race. Had things not gone down as they did in Miami-Dade, we might have had a different result.
It was the first domino to fall. It was the beginning of the end.
A wave of red rises across the state of Florida.
We drew the short straw and had that terrible mess with the Elian Gonzalez case. Cost him a lot of votes in Florida.
It was humiliating to many Cuban Americans, and the 2000 election was payback.
Bill Clinton got about 35% of the Cuban American vote in Florida in 1996. In 2000, Al Gore's support dropped to less than 20%.
What was the decisive factor in this election? The U.S. Supreme Court? The Clinton scandals? The debates? Or a little boy shipwrecked in Miami?
Who's to blame? Democratic sources say it's South Florida's former Hispanic golden boy, Alex Penelas.
Alex Penelas may have cost Al Gore the presidency of the United States.
Before they're being made to me, it's obviously nothing more than a PR stunt. Boy mayor finished his term, and Alex Penelas decided to run for United States Senate.
Thank you.
This Miami-Dade mayor and U.S. Senate candidate is doing damage control to save his reputation after being singled out by former presidential candidate Al Gore. One of the other candidates in this race became in 2000 the single most treacherous and dishonest person I dealt with during the campaign anywhere in America.
Alex Pinellas ended Al Gore's political career, and Al Gore returned the favor.
It was a moment. It was a Miami moment.
I have something else to ask you, to ask every American. I ask for you to pray for this great nation.
We're way ahead of you.
This country would have been so different if Al Gore had been elected. We would have addressed climate change. We would have maintained our position as the moral leaders of the free world.
Vice President Al Gore read the National Security Daily Briefs every day as vice president. I can't imagine he wouldn't have read them twice a day as president. I don't think that 9/11 would have happened.
A photo of one of the towers exploding appears.
We would not have gone to war in Iraq.
A soldier kneels on one knee.
The United States ended up in two wars and killed 350 to 500,000 people.
When we went to what I thought was an unjust war in Iraq, I actually regretted the fact that he'd become president.
Bush stands in front of the Mission Accomplished banner.
We went from a $300 billion surplus to running a $500 billion deficit. We put a giant hole in the American economy. We almost went insolvent.
A foreclosure sign hangs by a house.
I can draw a direct link to a war we shouldn't have fought, to over 3,000 soldiers dying, to 537 votes here in Miami.
What happened in Miami-Dade County changed the political landscape of this country forever.
America changed as a result of that one year in Miami. We have become one of the most polarized nations in the world. What Miami was, America became.
A sign reads, "The loser wins."
If people do not think that elections have consequences, they do. You need to take the time to vote.
Democracy is messy, but I'm a political animal. Politics is in my blood. So once an election is over, the best thing to do is start focusing on the next election.
Cut to black. Words appear. In 2020, Alex Pinellas mounted a political comeback and ran for his old job as Miami-Dade mayor. He finished third. Remaining opening credits, a raconteur production, a Hyper Object Industries production, a picture by Billy Corbin, music by Brian Robertson, edited by Harris Mendheim. Executive producers Adam McKay, Todd Schulman. Produced by Alfred Stallman, Billy Corbin. Directed by Billy Corbin. Credits roll. Copyright 2008, 537 Votes LLC, all rights reserved. First publication of this motion picture, sound recording and film, United States of America, 2008. 537 Votes LLC is the owner of the copyright in this motion picture. This motion picture is protected by the copyright laws of the United States of America and other countries. Logos, raconteur, noun, one who tells stories with skill. White Words on Black, Hyper Object Productions, a presentation of Home Box Office.